Well, I hope I can get the blood boiling a little bit there. Boy, we really got a lot to talk about here with this fight coming up. Evidently, boxing versus mixed martial arts, and so. But I do want to get you into the mood for a good fight, because everybody loves a good fight, right? Wrapping up the series that we've been doing all summer called Old School, really diving into the Old Testament of the Bible, which we've been calling the First Testament, really trying to elevate it a little bit and realize that it's so much of the heritage that we have received and been blessed with as the New Testament church, that the history, the sacred history and heritage that the Old Testament brings, that the New Testament that Jesus quoted, that Paul quoted, the whole New Testament relied on as God's revelation to his people, revelation to the world of his heart and his goodness and what he desires. It's just filled with so many amazing, colorful stories of faith. And we've been exploring those all summer long. And I think I've got a doozy for you to wrap up the summer with. But it gets a little intense. And it starts off, it's kind of a twin rivalry. Anybody watch these guys? These guys are hilarious. And so they're twins. And so one's a real estate agent and the other's a contractor, and they work together. But evidently they do some face-offs. You know, they kind of compete who can bring the most value to a home, you know. And then they compete. So kind of a brother versus brother, Jonathan and Drew. But I've got a twin rivalry, sibling rivalry story for you from the book of Genesis. And this thing lasts a thick 10 chapters that I'm going to try to, you know, sprint through most of it till the very end, and then we're going to kind of slow down and really look at a very intense episode. But I want to get you in the mood for two brothers really facing off that from the beginning of their lives, before they were even born, just were wrestling. I mean, in utero, in the womb. And God, you know, the mom, Rebecca, was wondering, what in the world is all this kicking going on inside me? And God speaks to her and says, there's more than the usual going on inside there, Rebecca. Two nations are in your body. Two tribes that are now inside you will be separated. One nation will be stronger than the other. The older will serve the younger. And so from the very beginning, there was this tension. And in a nutshell, we still see this tension today. I mean, you can trace much of what we see on the news to the tension that started in this womb. So the subtle Family Guy references, if you really want to get, you know, a lot out of my sermons, you got to keep up with Simpsons and Family Guy stuff. And so when Stewie, you don't remember that episode where Stewie, he's feeling threatened that his mom's going to have another baby. And so he goes in and he's got this amazing spaceship that shrinks down. You know, remember Fantastic Voyage? Anyway, so and he flies in a gland, you know, of his dad to kill off and he faces his future brother Bertram. Nobody remembers that. Anyway, there's this amazing like Star Wars epic battle scene inside of. Okay, so anyway. But just want you to appreciate that even before these two were born, they were at war with each other. And so, and they finally, they were wrestling, and finally the older, the first one, barely made it out first, Esau. He was kind of hairy and rough, and they named him Esau. But right on his heels was the second born. I mean, he was literally grabbing. He wanted to be the first one out. And so he gets the name Jacob, which means conniver or grappler or wrestler. Literally, it means heel grabber. I mean, literally, they named him that. You know, you'd get your name, you know, Timmy Martinez, you know, is born. The parents look at him and they just say Tim. I don't know. What is Tim? But I mean, so we don't really do that too much anymore. You know, it's like, you know, cute and squishy. You don't really name a kid that, you know, but, you know, we do cool names like Chase and Nick and stuff. And so, but back then, you would, you know, you'd get your name kind of by the vibe that you brought to the household. And so, as the boys grew up, and I'm just pulling quotes here from these Genesis stories to go on, kind of fill in the gaps here. The boys grew up. Esau became a skillful hunter, kind of a man's man. He liked the open country. He was an outdoorsy, you know, tough type of guy. But Jacob, a little more of, you know, was content to stay at home, help out around the house, among the tents. Isaac, the dad, liked the meat of wild animals. So he loved that Esau, you know, grew up to be a hunter, and he would go out and catch him game, wild game all the time. And so Esau became his favorite. However, Rebekah's favorite was Jacob. He'd help out around the home and you know, was a little more of a softer personality. So, a good way to remember it, one of my favorite shows, you know, how Raymond, you know, the younger brother, was mom's favorite. She was always doting over him, you know, but, you know, Robert was the, you know, the big strapping policeman, you know, and sometimes the dad would kind of tease Raymond for not being as tough as Robert. Anyway, so just some, you know, just kind of a way to relate to this family of these two brothers. And boy, Rebecca, you know, just wanted, see, in a typical Hebrew family, the tradition was the firstborn would get the double blessing, the double inheritance. They really made out well. Well, Rebecca wanted more for her favorite than would normally come to him. And so she devises a little bit of a plan, and Jacob, he's kind of a trickster. I mean, he's not named that for nothing. And he pulls a little trick on his brother, and I'm not going to ruin the story for you. I want you to go back and read that part of the story. But if you think, I mean, so Rebecca makes Ashton look like an amateur, the way she pumps Isaac out of the blessing for Esau and tricks him in a way that Jacob comes away with this blessing. And Jacob does his own little trick one day just over a bowl of stew. You know, Esau comes home and he's just starving, he's famished, you know, and Jacob's got some cooking skills, you know, growing up around the kitchen. And so he's all, hey, buddy, I got a little feast right here. He's all, give me some of that. I'll do anything for that. He's all, anything? I'll give you anything you want for that bowl of stew right now. Name it. He's all, well, how about something called a birthright, which that older sibling was supposed to get. And for Esau, all he could think about was his stomach in the moment, birthright, schmirthright, take whatever you want. Little brother, you know, doesn't realize what he's given away. In addition to, I don't have the time for going into what Rebecca does. You're not going to believe it when you read what she pulls on Isaac and Esau. But Esau comes away with nothing. And when Esau finds out how him and his dad have been duped, he totally freaks. Esau was angry with Jacob. He was angry because the blessing his father had given to Jacob. He said to himself, the days of sorrow over my father's death are near, and then I'll kill my brother Jacob and get back what I deserve. And so, yeah, so shades of taking, I mean, his birthright, his inheritance was taken from him. Liam Neeson, you know, I will find you and I will kill you. And throw in the Jar Jar just for fun. And so, anyway, what is Jacob going to do? His older, bigger, stronger brother who's used to tearing apart wild game is coming after him. Rebecca packs him a lunch, sets his GPS to a faraway village. Rebecca said to him, your brother Esau is planning to get back at you by killing you. Time to get out of Dodge. Now then, my son, do what I say. Run, Jacob, run. Run away at once to my brother Laban in Haran. She's got some family in a faraway off country and sets Jacob on a course to a place where he doesn't know anybody. He's not familiar with anything. He's kind of grown up around the home, but he is literally sprinting out of his home village and hoping he's fast enough to be free and safe from his older brother that's on his heels this time. He does escape. And he makes it to this village where his cousins live. And probably one of the most romantic scenes in the Bible, to me anyway. So he's thirsty, he's tired, and you know, he's kind of hanging out at this well in this, I don't know, in my mind she's a brunette. And so all of a sudden, you know, this cute brunette walks up and he just, it's just love at first sight. This is when he meets Rachel, and he just falls in love with, turns out she's his cousin, he doesn't know that, but they fall in love, and he asks for her hand in marriage from his uncle Laban. And Laban turns out to be a piece of work. And so, boy, Rebekah and Laban, brother and sister, what kind of family did they grow up in? Those two really knew how to get the most out of the people around them. They were very manipulative. And Laban goes, sure, would love to have you marry my daughter. It'd be great if you just hung out for 7 years and worked off the dowry there. And then you can marry and live happily ever after. To Jacob's credit, all he sees are fireworks with Rachel. And so I just love this line in the Bible. So he said he agreed to the 7 years, and to him it felt as if one day. 7 years just flew by, because all he could think about was big brown eyes and just how he was going to live happily ever after with Rachel. And so the big day comes 7 years later, and they've got a big wedding feast, and the couple get to go, you know, to their own tent finally, and come together and have their special wedding night. You know, they didn't, you know, Thomas Edison wasn't around yet. They didn't have, you know, the candles didn't last. The lighting wasn't that great. You wake up the next morning, wrong sister. And so Laban had placed the older sister, Leah, in the tent. And Jacob freaks out the next morning. He's all, I worked 7 years for the other daughter. You know, and like, what? And not her. It's like, what's going on here? And Laban's like, yeah, funny thing there. You've got a little tradition around these parts where really the older sister's supposed to get married first. But tell you what I'm going to do. You can have both of my daughters as your wives. No problem. Just throw in another 7 years, we'll call it good. And so, you know, what I am more confident things with their older sister. I mean, just the most awkward moment. Fine, whatever. I'm not going to, you know, I'm kind of feeling a little trapped. So now he's married to both sisters. I love this little cartoon. I mean, because you can imagine what Valentine's Day looks like, you know, in this happy marriage. And so I'll let you read that. So anyway. And so a little bit awkward, but, you know, Jacob and the girls flex and start building a family. The next thing you know, I mean, Jacob has become this wealthy businessman. He rivals Laban in his wealth, and he has amassed quite the fortune and family. So this is what his family basically looks like by the time he hears a special message from God that I'm going to hear in a second. So this is basically, it's like the Brady Bunch and the Partridge Family combined. I mean, literally, it's 11 kids. And so you got the 6 Brady kids and the 5 Partridges. You got 11 kids by now. Now, eventually, Jacob has 12. And we're going to talk about that in a little bit. But Benjamin doesn't come along till later, much later. And it's too sad of the story, so I'm just going to skip right through. Benjamin even means son of my sorrow. But we're not going to get in there. We're going to keep things a little happy right now. And so even, I mean, the thing is, some of these kids were even from the help, from the housekeeper. I mean, it's things get a little, you know, and again, I can't cover the detail. Maybe I'll do a whole, Jacob's life deserves a whole series sometimes. Maybe we'll do that. I mean, and each of the wives had their own housekeeper and things, you know, got, so we got to kind of throw in, if you throw in, what's her name, you know, so now you really got the complete picture of what Jacob's family looks like, okay, is, you know, the wives, the kids, except they're all boys at this point. And so one, again, Dinah comes on a little later, but so 11 boys, 2 wives, 2 surrogate wives, and he hears this message from God one night. Then the Lord spoke to Jacob. He said, "Go back to your father's land and to your relatives. I will be with you." Are you kidding me? After all this, you want me to? I've got a great reputation right now. I got this huge family and success. To go back there, where my wanted poster is everywhere, and my brother's out to kill me. I'm not going back there. But Jacob, because he's seen how God has blessed him in this place where he's started from nothing and now has so much, trust God that even though he's going back into the danger zone, God is with him and will be with him. But he's still nervous. All right, now we dive into the real story. So now I hope you got a little background, what's going on in Jacob's life and the direction he's going, but what he is facing. Imminent death. He doesn't want to go back, but he's trusting God. God must have his reasons. So Jacob sent messengers ahead of him to his brother Esau. He's learned some negotiating skills in his dealings with Laban. You kind of have to. And so he's become quite the businessman and negotiator. He said, "Here's what you must tell my master Esau." And he puts it in those words. He wants Esau to know that he's sorry, that he regrets what he's done, and he humbles himself. He said, "Here's what you must tell my master Esau. Your servant Jacob." Make sure you say that word, servant. To my big brother. I don't want him to think that I'm coming in guns a-blazing. I realize what I did was wrong and I want to make things right. Your servant Jacob says, "I have cattle, I have donkeys, I have sheep, I've got goats. I also have male and female servants. I've got quite the staff. Now I'm sending you this message. I hope I can please you." The messengers came back to Jacob. They said, "Okay, we went to your brother Esau. He's coming now to meet you. With 400 men, by the way." All right. Hopefully, he gets, "I'm not coming to attack. I'm coming to give and to serve." Jacob was very worried and afraid. So he separated the people with him into 2 groups. He also separated the flocks and herds of camels. And he was a traveling village, just his family. He thought Esau might come and attack one group. If he does, the group that's left might have some time to escape. "God, you really want me to go in this direction? Things were just fine, like they were." Then Jacob prayed, "Lord, you are the one who said to me, 'Go back to your country and your relatives. Then I will give you success.' You've been very kind and faithful to me, but I'm not worthy of any of this. When I crossed this Jordan River, all I had was my walking stick. But now I've become 2 camps. Please save me from the hand of my brother Esau. I'm afraid he'll come and attack me and the mothers with their children. But you have said, 'I will surely give you success. I will make your children as many as the grains of sand on the seashore. People will not even be able to count them.' So we're good, right? You're with me, right?" So Jacob spent the night there. He chose a gift for his brother Esau from what he had with him. He chose 200 female goats, 20 male goats. He chose 200 female sheep and 20 male sheep. He chose 30 female camels and their little ones. He chose 40 cows and 10 bulls. And he chose 20 female, this huge gift of wealth and assets, 10 male donkeys. He put each herd by itself. Then he put his servants in charge of them. He said to his servants, go on ahead of me. Keep some space between the herds. And he wants to impress. He wants Esau to be blown away by this gift. And maybe this will soften the blow. And Esau will realize that even though Jacob completely ripped him off, Jacob is now in a position to give back even more than what Esau would have inherited from his father. Jacob spoke to his servant who was leading the way. He said, my brother Esau will meet you. He'll ask, who is your master? Where are you going? And who owns all these animals in front of you? Then say to Esau, they belong to your servant Jacob. Make sure you say that word servant. They are a gift to you from him. And Jacob is coming behind us. Jacob was thinking, I'll make peace with him, with these gifts I'm sending on ahead. When I see him later, maybe he'll be cool. Maybe he will welcome me. Maybe. So Jacob's gifts went on ahead of him, but he himself spent the night in the camp. That night, Jacob got up. He took his two wives, his two female servants, and his 11 sons and sent them across the Jabbok River. Sort of personally smuggled them across. After they had crossed the stream, he sent over everything he owned. Made himself completely vulnerable to Esau. So Jacob was left alone on the far side of the river. In the night. In the dark, just by himself, completely vulnerable. But hey, if I'm going to get attacked, at least it's just going to be me. If somehow there's spies about, if somehow Esau sifts through everything I've sent ahead, at least he'll spare everybody because he won't see me. Who knows what's going through Jacob's mind? In that place of loneliness and dark and wonder and maybes. Clinging on, trusting that God will come through. Even though he always has, will he this time? Can you relate to that? Even though he always has, will he this time? And then all of a sudden, out of nowhere, he hears something, he senses another presence. And the fight is afoot. A man wrestled with him until morning. The man saw that he couldn't win. So he touched the inside of Jacob's hip. As Jacob wrestled with the man, Jacob's hip was twisted. Then the man said, let me go. It's morning. These two are fighting hand to hand. Body to body, all night long in each other's grasp. Jacob is fighting for his life. He's fighting for everything he's been living for. Everything he feels God has blessed him with can now be gone. This could be his last moment. He's giving everything he possibly can to win this fight against the stranger who's mugged him. Who's appeared out of nowhere. Who knows who started what? All we know is the tension was so thick that anything that made a noise, Jacob was going to attack, be on the defensive. And survival instincts just kicked into the mass. But Jacob replied, I won't let you go unless you bless me. Somehow, Jacob realizes this is no ordinary man that he's been wrestling with that can just paralyze him in this one moment, this one touch. And he realizes who he is up against. The man asked him, what is your name?
Jacob, he answered. Then the man said, your name will not be conniver, heel grabber anymore. Instead, it will be Israel. It will be Israel. This is where the name, the word Israel, comes from this fight. You have wrestled with God and people, and you have won. What does that even mean? This is one of those stories that's so intense, yet filled with mystery, various interpretations. I remember the person, the story, just like, you don't see this coming. You're just wondering, you're thinking all about Esau and the tension and what's laying ahead for Jacob. And then he just gets jumped in the middle of the night by this being, this God in disguise. This angel of God, this presence that Jacob at first thinks is an enemy that he needs to fight, and then he realizes that he can't overpower, and he's powerless against this being that touches him in such a way he could have taken him out at any point. You can see in retrospect. And he says, but I love it. God says, this guy's just never going to give up. And he touches him in a way that he has to give up. And he says, look, you've been fighting all your life. You've been fighting, you've been wrestling all your life. You've been struggling against God. You know what? You never even call me your God. Every time I come up in conversation, you refer to me as the God of your fathers, of Abraham and Isaac. Jacob, I'm your God. And I want you to never forget that. And you don't have to fight anymore. In fact, your whole identity, everyone's going to know you, not anymore as a wrestler, as a conniver, as somebody chasing things. You're going to be known as Israel, triumphant with God. That's you. And maybe you don't know that, maybe you don't feel that. That is who you are. And Jacob learned that in that moment, that all his fighting wasn't taking him anywhere. And once he was made still, and God touched him in a certain way that he couldn't fight back any longer, all he could do was hold on, because I'm not letting you go. When he realized who this person was, and that he was the source of any and every blessing. So I'm not, okay, I get it. I can't fight anymore. But I'm not going to let go until you bless me. And that's just the moment God wanted to bring Jacob to. Quit fighting. Just be blessed. Because I have blessing for you. I'm not against you. You don't have to be against anybody. Just live at peace and know that you've won my heart over because of how you've trusted me to go back into this situation. How you've humbled yourself to give back for the wrong that you did. I love it. You've won me over. Triumphant. You don't need to keep fighting. Jacob said, please tell me your name. And with a smile on his face in my imagination, God says, why do you want to know my name? Come on. You know who I am. Then he blessed Jacob there. So Jacob named the place Peniel. He said, I saw God face to face. Anytime you see that L at the end of a Hebrew word, that's one of the words for God. So, face of God. I saw God face to face, but I'm still alive. The sun rose above Jacob as he passed by Peniel. He was limping because of his hip. Lifelong reminder of this moment now that Jacob keeps, a souvenir from this night. That's why the Israelites don't eat the, by the way, from the scribe retelling the story. That's why the Israelites don't eat the meat attached to the inside of an animal's hip. They don't eat it to this day. It's because the inside of Jacob's hip was touched. Now, you know, if you grew up in a Hebrew home or had Jewish friends and you're always wondering, hey, where's the hip meat? Come on, seriously, it's like the tastiest part. So, you know, they kind of keep that to the side. So, there you go. So, I love this Rembrandt of this occasion. I just kind of want to stare at this image a little bit and reflect in our own lives. What are we fighting against? What are we so caught up in? What are we wrestling for? What have we been so intense about and so ornery about and so I've got to have it my way about? I've got to get mine. I've got to win out. I've got to be first. I've got to be best. I've got to have it all. And nothing's going to get my way. And so much energy, so much emotion gets wasted and thrown into these frivolous feats where God's saying, look, I've got you. I've known you since before anyone else. And I want you, and I want to bless you, and I will take care of you. You don't need to keep fighting me. You don't need to keep fighting everybody around you. Enjoy what I can give you. Just hold on to me. Fight. Just hold and be held. And see what blessing I can bring. And then you'll triumph. Then you'll succeed. Then you'll feel what real success, the real good life, feels like and is about that God has planned for all of His kids. Jacob's never the same. He's Israel. And you know what? Kind of feeling we need to do a Life of Jacob series down the line here sooner than later. Because of how Jacob's life is transformed and who he becomes known for after this moment. And the adventures he gets into as Israel. But this is the beginning. His sons grow into tribes. Those 12 tribes become nations of Israel. I mean, a legacy that Earth's history, human history, cannot be talked about without mentioning Israel started in this moment, in this fight, in this end to the fight. It gives us this incredible story that we don't have to fight. We just have to hold on and enjoy what God has for us and live in that. Happy ending. Esau can't believe his eyes. That little squirt accumulated all this. God has surely blessed him, and I will too. And he welcomes him home with open arms and starts getting to know his nieces and nephews, and mostly nephews at this point. Yeah. And they're one big happy family. In fact, they grow so big that they've got to literally, you know, separate at some point, but they even part ways on great terms. And it's an awesome story. Take the time to read through those. It's a little R, a little more, it's a little NC-17 at times. And so, but yeah, that's what's fun about that first testament. And so, those chapters in Genesis, what's so great about them is they're so real. Nobody's perfect. Everybody's messed up. Everybody's got their problems, their flaws, their frailties, their weaknesses that they succumb to. But God loves them anyway and carries them through this blessing after blessing. It's just so many stories full of grace. Well, as John and Mary Mac come back up, I just want to say a little prayer that God will work in each of our hearts because of all the flaws that we carry, that we bring into the world around us. That God doesn't stop loving us, but that we would realize that. And we would realize we can let down our guard. We don't have to fight for what we think we need. God gives us just what we need when we need it. And we can trust Him just like Jacob did. And be blessed and be triumphant. Be Israel. Lord Jesus, thank You. Thank You for these stories. These stories that just inspire us to trust You and to realize that we can be loved unconditionally. You love these guys. They became heroes. They were completely messed up. But they hung in there even just a little bit and trusted You. Lord, if we can just hold on to You and trust You and know the blessing will come, the peace will come. You will bring resolution to all the tensions. You will bring peace to all the fights. And so, Lord, when we feel that tension in our hearts and our bodies over the problems that come our way, instead of just wanting to fight our way through them, Lord, let us just remember to hold still, to hold on to You, and You will be there. You're always there. You're always there for us. We thank You in Jesus' name. Amen. We'll come to the communion table when you are ready, and if you're new at Neighborhood, we just invite you in your own timing to enjoy and receive Jesus' reminder to us that He died for us, that He would do anything for us. And so we just like to, we have the bread and the juice, to just take the bread and dip in the cup and take in your own timing as you feel led here as we sing these next couple songs. And if you would like prayer, we'll be back in the room. We'd love to pray with you.